shocking discoveries, a deeply moving account of reconciliation, of closure after decades of family pain. And we can't even begin to exhaust all the details and wonders of this story, but we'll get the big picture anyway. Joseph was living the dream as a teenager. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. And his orientation was a blessed life as his father's favorite son. His hateful, jealous brother sold him to slave traders. Terribly disorienting. That was very disturbing. But he ended up adjusting to his new normal as the head servant for an Egyptian official named Potiphar. And he excelled as God enabled him to be extremely productive. But that new orientation lasted a while until Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Joseph. And he maintained his integrity. He didn't fall for it, but she accused him of sexual misconduct, and that landed him in prison. More disorientation after things were going better. But he was freed from prison because God enabled Joseph to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, because God helped him. God was forecasting 7 years of abundance that would be followed by 7 years of devastating, ruining famine. And so Joseph suggested a plan to survive all that was coming, and Pharaoh put him in charge. Now, this is unthinkable. This is totally incredible to think a Hebrew slave from the prison is now suddenly second in command in all Egypt. But God was at work. And that's where we pick up the story today. Joseph was living in luxury, in power and authority, in blessing, because God's grace and his faithfulness. So this was a new orientation for Joseph. And then he's blessing many peoples, not just the Egyptians, but really starving people from surrounding nations come to Egypt begging for grain. That put Egypt in a position of greater power over these other nations now depending on them. And that put Joseph in yet higher esteem in the land. But then he was rocked again by the surprise appearance of his own brothers from Canaan who are looking for famine relief. This was disorientation again. He's confronted with an opportunity for revenge, but he chose reconciliation. And I'm wondering, is there anyone here experiencing estrangement from family members? I wonder if anyone has suffered treachery at the hands of someone that you loved and trusted, someone who shouldn't have betrayed you, and now you don't even know if you can forgive them. And I'm looking around at a world that has lost its equilibrium, its relational equilibrium. People so deeply divided around the world and even in our nation. Bitter animosities so deeply rooted, decades of inequities and oppression and injustices held on to that seem like they'll never be repaired. I mean, it'll never find peace. In the Middle East, you think there'll ever be peace? You know, you wonder. But you know what? Joseph's grace brought restoration and vindication and preservation and family reunion. It was a reorientation. And our world needs that. Our world needs that. You and I need that. And so let's get into this story to learn ways that grace brings relational equilibrium. Now, remember a few weeks ago, those dreams that Joseph had as a teenager that infuriated his brothers. They were so mad they sold him into slavery. And these dreams were about all of them bowing down to him. I mean, if your brother came and told you that, you'd be mad too, all right? But it was all about to come true. And the famine had impacted Canaan. It had spread beyond Egypt. And so Jacob sent his 10 sons to Egypt to buy food, since Egypt was the only nation that had any, thanks to the good plans of Joseph. And so humbly, they came prostrate before Joseph to purchase grain. The dream was fulfilled right then. And Joseph recognized them immediately, but they thought they were just talking to the ruler of Egypt. You know, they didn't know any better. They didn't expect Joseph to be there. And so to test them, Joseph accused them of being spies. And under extreme questioning, they explained to him all about their family, about their father back home who was elderly, and the one remaining son, the younger son, Benjamin, who lived there, and the one son who was gone, dead and gone now, you know, or so they thought. And so Joseph listened to their story, he sent them home with grain. He gave them food that they needed. But he kept one of the brothers, Simeon, demanding that they return again with their younger brother, Benjamin, to verify their story. Otherwise, he'd know they were spies and they'd be in big trouble. And so they knew their father might have a coronary about that. So listen to their distress in Genesis chapter 42 with verse 21. They said to one another, "Surely we're being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. But that's why this distress has come upon us." And Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." And they didn't realize that Joseph could understand them, since he was using an interpreter. You know, they thought he's an Egyptian ruler. They didn't know he could understand their Hebrew language. Anyway, verse 24 says, "He turned away from them and began to weep." See, Joseph could see these guys are haunted by guilt, and he could see the remorse in them. They went back home. They got home, and Jacob refused to allow them to take Benjamin back to Egypt to retrieve Simeon and so on. He wasn't going to allow that to happen. Chapter 42, verse 38, Jacob said, "My son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he's the only one left." I wonder how that made him feel. All right? So anyway, "he's the only one left. And if harm comes to him on the journey you're taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow." I mean, this will just kill me. But eventually the grain ran out. And so they were really desperate. And after much, much pleading, Jacob finally relented, allowing Benjamin to go with them to purchase more grain and hopefully retrieve Simeon. And upon their arrival, it didn't go as they expected. Joseph had them brought to his house, up to the palace, and prepared a magnificent feast for them. And when Joseph saw Benjamin, his little brother, he could not restrain his tears, and he wept privately again. But then, Benjamin was accused of stealing a silver cup from Joseph. And so now he would have to become Joseph's slave. The very thing his father so all up worried about. And this was all a setup by Joseph. It was another test by Joseph to discern their hearts. He wanted to know if his brothers cared more about themselves or if they really did care about their father and about Benjamin and about doing what is right. And the brothers were horrified. And Judah pleaded to let him take Benjamin's place. And he explained that this would kill their beloved father. And so it's quite dramatic here. But then chapter 45, verse 1. "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants. And he cried out, 'Have everyone leave my presence.' And so there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's house heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still living?' But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence." You know, they're in big trouble now. And then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. And when they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve you for a for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. And so then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. That's quite a startling revelation. And the brothers were sent back home to retrieve their father, to retrieve their families and belongings, and they would relocate everyone to Egypt under Joseph's protection and provision. Jacob was absolutely stunned when he found out his long-lost son hadn't been dead all this time, you know? And so he's thrilled. And God spoke to Jacob and reassured him that God would accompany Jacob and his family to Egypt, where they would now live and they would multiply to become a great nation, and that he would bring them back to the land of Canaan, the great promised land that he'd promised to Abraham and Isaac and to him so many years before. And so there was this tearful reunion of a father and son in the land of Egypt, as Jacob got to embrace Joseph once again. And it was a moving time. And of course, the family, God's covenant people, were able to survive the famine because of what God had orchestrated. And so, we learned the first way of relational equilibrium is receiving grace. Receiving grace. It seems apparent to me that we must be recipients of God's grace before we can grow in the Lord and have a right relationship with Him and then effectively show grace to others. Before we'll ever have relational equilibrium this way and this way, we have to be recipients of grace. Over and over, Joseph experienced the grace of God in his life, enabling him through the most difficult circumstances and injustices. One of the great lines in Joseph's story is, the Lord was with Joseph. But the Lord was with Joseph. No matter what he was going through, the Lord was with Joseph. He was a slave, but the Lord's grace empowered him to be quite profitable to his master, which gave him more privilege and more responsibility. Later, unjustly imprisoned, he found favor with the prison warden because the Lord was with Joseph. And so he was given privilege and responsibility, and he was very productive there. And again, God enabled him to interpret the dreams of the baker and the cupbearer of Pharaoh, who had been thrown into the prison, which eventually earned his release from prison. And then God enabled Joseph to interpret Pharaoh's dreams about the 7 years of abundance to get ready for the 7 years of deadly famine. And as a result, Joseph was awarded this high position, this great privilege and power to rule in Egypt next to Pharaoh. The point is, Joseph didn't earn all these things. Joseph didn't deserve all this. God gifted Joseph. He granted this to him. Grace is what enabled him through all these circumstances. And when that much grace is poured out on you, it humbles you. It changes you. And you're filled with gratitude. And you're moved to love others and enable them when they're helpless. Now think of the shock of seeing his dastardly brothers who had taken so much from him now groveling at his feet for food after all these years. And his heart could have been flooded with revenge, but instead his heart went out to them and he was overwhelmed with tears and mercy and love. And he showed them grace, the kind of grace that God had shown him. You know, our world struggles to overcome racial tension. This issue seems so complicated and the division so deep and intense. It seems they'll never be erased, they'll never be overcome, they'll never be bridged. And friends, I don't mean to oversimplify this. But I believe we know the answer. I believe we possess the answer for healing, for the way of reconciliation. Because when people receive God's grace, it changes them. It changes them. His grace overpowers all sin, and it breaks down the barriers. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 16 and 17 explains, so from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone. The old, the new has come. Recipients of grace are able to share God's grace with others. And that's why our mission here isn't social justice. Our mission here isn't looking for ways to bring peace and goodness in the neighborhood. That's not our priority. Now, we do that, but that's not our priority. Our mission is to share the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, the grace of the Lord. His grace brings peace inside us and then enables peace with one another. And I can tell you that one of our church's goals is to continue to cultivate an ethos where people of all different kinds of backgrounds and ethnicities are welcomed and loved and served because we've received grace. We believe that God has called us to a ministry of reconciliation. Margaret Achero was pregnant during the horrible fighting in northern Uganda brought on by the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, they were called. One day, a band of child soldiers led by one adult commander invaded their village, and they just slaughtered many people with machetes, just cut them up. And the commander wouldn't let the boys kill Margaret, thinking that it was bad luck to kill a pregnant woman. But he did instruct them instead to cut off her ears, her nose, and her lips, and they did, leaving her in the field bleeding to death. But thankfully, she was rescued, and she was taken to emergency medical center where they were able to treat her and do some repairs. You can see in the picture. And later, she was moved to a rehab facility run by Christian missionaries. And there, she was led to the Lord, and she was assisted in her ongoing recovery and the birth of her child and lived there for a time. She was shocked when one day that commander who had later was captured, was brought to the mission for spiritual rehabilitation. Now imagine the raw emotions that she felt when she's confronted with the very one who had violated her soul. But being a recipient of God's grace in her own life, Margaret was able to forgive and be reconciled. In fact, overcome by God's grace and her grace towards him, this commander too became a Christian and a good friend of Margaret. That's the way to change our fractured world. It's by grace, God's grace. And so we receive grace, but the second way to relational equilibrium is to extend grace. It's extending grace. The moment the brothers realized this Egyptian lord was Joseph, whom they had treated so badly, that they had brutalized and terrorized him, they were horrified themselves. They were afraid. Joseph magnanimously, though, embraced his estranged brothers. Shockingly, he didn't hold ill will for them or mistreat them. He was praising God instead, praising God for God's providential plan to preserve this covenant family in time of great crisis. He didn't pretend that he hadn't been traumatized, but he was moving on. The truth is, these guys hadn't forgiven themselves for their treachery, so why expect Joseph to forgive them? They couldn't accept that, but he did. He forgave them. And so many people live with such heavy shame and guilt, and they need grace. Joseph had been a slave in Egypt, but you know what? His brothers had lived as slaves to their own guilt for what they had done to him all these years. You can see it in them. They're tormented, and they needed grace. They needed freedom. And after their father died, the brothers were again terrified that Joseph would now get his revenge. And they begged for their lives, and they offered themselves as slaves. And this just made Joseph weep more for them. He was weeping for them for their lack of understanding, and he reassured them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? God's the one who judges justly. He's going to take care of all that." Extending God's grace blows people away. It's the way to reconciliation. It seems Joseph took the initiative to do five things that I think can help us reconcile when we need to. First of all, release the debtor. We've got to release the debtor. See, the debt isn't just canceled when you forgive someone. You absorb the debt yourself. You set the offender free, and it sets you free from carrying the grudge any longer, the offense anymore. Does someone owe you something? An apology? Do they owe you an explanation? Some remorse? Do they owe you a penalty served? Do they owe you restitution? Jesus shows us the way to reconciliation is when the offended party suffers the loss, pays the debt, takes the hit themselves. Joseph saw the remorse and the changes in his brothers. He was willing to forgive them and move on. He set them free. Secondly, resist retaliation. You know, there's a whole genre of popular action movies, especially in TV shows, in which the storyline is totally fueled by revenge. That guy did evil to us, and we're going to get him back. We're going to get him, you know? And that resonates with us. We want justice. We want revenge. And Joseph was in a position to crush his brothers, but he chose mercy instead. And so much bitterness could be diffused if we would just squelch the urge of retaliation. Next, relinquish the hurt. You got to give it up to God. We're tempted to hold on to it and nurse it and let it abscess. But that's just punishing ourselves. Let it go. Don't start singing that song, okay? But I'm serious. Put it in God's capable hands and let Him take the sting out of it. Set your mind on things above. Relinquish the hurt, and that means we also rely on God. We lean into Him to soothe and comfort our hearts, but also to empower us to forgive. You might insist, there's no way I can forgive him after what he did to me, but God can fill your heart and mind with the power and the spirit to forgive as he forgives us. But then we have to go beyond forgiveness in your heart. It's got to go beyond that. This is where this process gets really tough. We seek to restore the person or the relationship. Now, that may or may not mean that you go back to the way things were. For example, the divorced may not be able to remarry now if they're going to be reconciled. The fallen leader may not be able to lead again and so on. But as far as possible, the goal is to reconcile and to renew that person and to renew the relationship if possible. Joseph didn't just forgive. He went beyond that. He showered his brothers with provisions and blessings and new homes and safety. And he embraced them as family once again. Of course, for restoration to be successful, there has to be remorse and humility and repentance consistently evidenced on the part of the offender, right? That's going to have to happen too. And there'll be new levels of communication and honesty explored in this relationship. Accountability is going to be heightened. Trust is going to be earned slowly. It's tested over time. But to some degree, trust has to still be given to someone who hasn't been trustworthy. But you have to give them some so they can earn some back. It's a process worth taking slowly. But the goal is to restore. And that's only possible when we extend grace. And I pray that if you have a relationship that needs to be reconciled, that you will, as a recipient of God's grace, that you will extend grace starting today. Do what you need to do today. My friends, there's something much more than this family's story of reconciliation. A larger, grander story here. Another way that brings equilibrium in our world, in our relationships, and that is appreciating grace. Appreciating grace. I am so impressed with Joseph. The Bible says by faith, Joseph was actually able to perceive the big story. He recognized that all these things that he had been through personally, all the disorientation and reorientation and disorientation and reorientation, had not just been about him or even just about his family. My my prayer this past week as I have labored over this message has been that God opens our eyes this morning so that we can perceive and appreciate what Joseph saw. That we might realize the immense scope of God's amazing grace and what He's doing in our midst and even in our trials, in our triumphs, and that we would realize the depth of what God is doing in our lives and in our world and just how big it is. Notice Joseph's perceptive words to his terrified brothers, once again, chapter 45, verses 7 and 8, where he tells them, "But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God." He's attributing this to God. He's telling them, God was using your evil and God was using my suffering as a means to bring about His purpose to preserve our lives and keep His covenant promise with us. God's doing something here. And He's reassuring His brothers again later after his dad died in chapter 50, in verse 20. He says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Saying, guys, this goes way beyond you and me, our family. It's bigger than that. This is God saving all of Egypt. More than that, thousands came from surrounding nations and Egypt had enough reserves to keep them alive as well because God was working. See, God is about saving as many people as possible. He loves the world. So God was intricately and ever so slowly weaving this story, a plan that would dramatically begin to unfold again some 400 years in the future from these events about Joseph we're studying now. Well, in fact, listen to the words of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22, reflecting back centuries later on Joseph's faith. It says, "By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions about his bones." You see, by faith, Joseph could see God's bigger plan. He could picture God's promise fulfilled to bring his covenant people back to the land of promise that he had promised to Abraham and so on. And we see that, we see him saying that at the very end of Genesis chapter 50. Verse 24, Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land He promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear on an oath and said, "God will surely come to your aid. Then you must carry my bones up from this place." Joseph's telling them, it's coming. It's coming. And one day God's going to take, He's going to raise. And you know, through all those centuries up until the Exodus, they kept passing along those words of Joseph, passing them along. And when they left, God did free them from Egyptian slavery, they took His bones with them to the promised land. That's significant. That's wonderful, all that God did there, just to set up this amazing Exodus story that comes next in the Scripture. But you know what? We can't even stop there. That's just part of it. That's just the tip of the iceberg. What we must realize is that this isn't just a story about a family's reconciliation by grace. Isn't God good? It's not just that. This is a story about our reconciliation by grace. Don't you see? This is a story about us. When God allowed Joseph to languish in that prison all those years, He was thinking of you. When God gave dreams to Pharaoh that only Joseph could interpret, when God set up Joseph to save all of Egypt, He was orchestrating things for you, with you in mind. When God reunited Joseph's family and brought them to Egypt, He was planning for embracing you for all eternity. Everything God did for Joseph and his family, all the things endured and all the blessings that flowed, their dramatic reunion was all the movement of God to set up the great deliverance from slavery in Egypt 400 years later in a time when Joseph was long forgotten. And the people had become enslaved. And that Exodus, that God empowered by many miracles and great powers, and the great Passover when the death angel killed the Egyptian firstborn, but passed over the Israelite dwellings where they were covered with the blood of the unblemished lamb. All that was a foreshadowing of the ultimate deliverance provided for all who are covered in the blood of the unblemished sacrificial lamb of Jesus Christ. And we are set free from an even greater slavery, the slavery of sin and death. And I pray that we will just stand in awe of God Almighty, who loves us so much that He plotted and He worked in the choices of good and evil men for centuries, not to save the world from starvation, but to save the world from condemnation, to save the world for reconciliation with Him. We're part of this ongoing story. Our lives are intimately linked with Joseph by God's grace. And the story is not over, folks. It's not over. Far from over. God is still saving, and we're stewards of the story, sharing the good news of salvation with as many people as we possibly can. And every time there's a baptism like Jared last Sunday, the story of grace and salvation continues to expand. This is glory. This is glorious. Holy stuff here. Our God is awesome. Why are we on our knees in awe of Him? No, you see, He's still working in your life and mine and in this world. And He's been working all along because He loves us. He loves us so much. He's a wonderful God. This is the equilibrium of walking in His grace. When we step into the grace of God, we experience the most unimaginable joys. Joseph was flooded with glory and honor and power and privilege, and only God could have orchestrated that. When Joseph got to be a part of saving Egypt and so many other lives, When Joseph connected the dots and realized that God was using little old him to accomplish so much and to save his own family. And when Joseph got to embrace his father once again after all those years, I mean, how do you describe the marvelous joy of that? And the joy of being, the joy of realizing that you've been in the hands of God all along. How does that change your perspective of whatever you're going through right now? And when we step into the grace of God, we begin to understand the mysteries of our pain. And we say, oh, now I get it. Now I'm beginning to see. When our slavery and our spider hole and our Egyptian prison and our injustice and our separation, and we can be confident that God is up to something big. He has plans that are bigger than me. And it's my honor just to be a part of it. His grace is enough for me in my situation. So go God. Go God. And when we step into the grace of God, irreversibly damaged relationships can be restored. They can be. The grace that reconciles me to God and enables me in this life is the grace that can flow through me. And you and I can be instruments of grace to bring reconciliation to a very divided world and many very divided homes. But friends, more than any of this, when we step into the grace of God, we witness His unseen purposes unfold to save many, to save many. And we get to play a role. We get to be a part of that. God's working in your life and yours and yours and yours, in your ups and downs, your dreams and nightmares. And God will turn your dreams into realities that exceed your dreams. And He will bring many into His glorious kingdom. When you get up from your seat today and you approach the communion table to partake of the Lord's Supper, there is a gigantic story there that started way before the cross and resurrection. It started way back in Genesis. God's been working that story with you in mind. He loves you that much. He knew the sins you would commit. He knew the struggles that you would endure. And He loved you. He did something about it. Because He wants relationship with you. And so I hope you'll come to that table and relate with Him. I hope you'll commune with Him with a new understanding and a greater awe and a deeper love and a stronger commitment and a realization that you're part of His story and His plan. Maybe today someone needs to say, I'm ready to step into that grace. I need to be forgiven of sins. I'm like those brothers. I've done some things I'm not very proud of. And I need forgiveness. And God forgives. And He'll wash you clean in the waters of baptism because of what Jesus did on the cross for you. And so if you'd like to take that step of faith today, I'll meet you in the front. During our encounter time, you just come on up.